Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is Ken, the Passion Entrepreneur, your Chief Profitability Officer, your Sales and Profit Evangelist. Thank you for listening in. What we do at E3C, E3C stands for Entrepreneurship, Empowerment, and Evolution, and the C stands for Connect, Collaborate, and Create. Better sales and profits now, that's what I say. But what we do is we show you how to maximize your profits and business opportunities. We teach you the best practices for profitability and share with you new ideas and strategies to take your business to the next level. Check us out on the website Better Sales and Profits Now. That's www.bettersalesandprofitsnow, which is so important.com. We want you to listen, learn, enjoy, and share. Today we're going to talk about the ABCs of corporate boards. And now you're saying life is good. You're owner of a $1 million business, or you're close to getting that $1 billion business, and you're successful. Now, other owners and CEOs want you to help them too. So, how do you do that? You find yourself sitting on boards of directors. This is your first time. Like many Americans today, this scenario is more likely to happen than you think. Once solely considered the tool of corporate world, now boards of directors have infiltrated the life of the average citizen. And everybody's reliant on the decision-making prowess of a board and the board members to keep the company running smoothly. Today we're talking with association management expert and author Kelvin Clemens. And he says it's imperative for a new board member to be aware of the mechanics, the etiquette, the leadership skills that go with being on a board of directors. So we're going to talk about boards, corporate boards. And he is the founder and president of Clemens & Associates, and he deals with association management. Right here in Baltimore, but I'm in Atlanta. But he is in Baltimore. He has over 30 years of experience. And we're going to talk to him about corporate boards. And I should mention this too. Kelvin has written a book called The Perfect Board. The Perfect Board. I like that title. He reveals tips, strategies, techniques, ideas necessary to be a successful member of any board of directors. So with that, let's bring on Kelvin. Kelvin, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Ken, I'm fine today, and thanks very much for having me on your show, and you can call me Cal.
Okay, Cal. All right, then. I will do that. Let's get to some very basic, the fundamentals. First of all, what is a corporate board, and what is the purpose of a corporate board?
Well, we can talk about boards, not only on corporate boards, but also nonprofit boards. They work similarly. A corporate board generally receives compensation. But basically, on a board, you have the people who are either elected or appointed that are to serve and to represent the, you know, on a corporate board, you'd be representing the shareholders of the corporation. And as such, they would bring ideas and try to develop policy and make decisions that are for the best of the corporation or of the organization.
Wow. So corporate board, why are corporate boards so important? I'll just ask that dumb question, if you will. But why do we have corporate boards?
Well, for publicly traded organizations and companies, and for a lot of even the ones that are not private corporations, you are by law, you have to have a board. Mm-hmm. And it depends upon the state that you're in and how your company is organized. But a lot of cases, your articles of incorporation will tell you that your board will consist of so many people. And then you have your bylaws that go into it even in greater detail.
So why is it law, though? Why is it important that we have a law that you have to have a corporate board and people on the board?
Well, I think when most of the states developed their corporate law, they wanted to make sure that the organization wasn't just run by one person, that they were receiving information from others as well as just perhaps the owner. And it represents the other folks. Like for most of your publicly traded organizations, you have various members that are appointed to the board and then approved, obviously, by the board. And they are supposed to represent the shareholders.
Okay. All right. That's very interesting.
And it's the same way it's the same way in a nonprofit organization where you have a board where those elected or appointed board members represent the various members or the constituencies of the organization. Same basic principle. It's almost like Congress, you know, we could not have everybody in the United States sitting in the halls of Congress. I mean, you couldn't find a building big enough, so that's why we have representative government.
Oh, we have
same
representative
principle.
Government? That's probably another show. I'm not sure we have representative government because my taxes keep going up and they're talking about doing all this other stuff. So corporate boards are there for the shareholders of the company, not necessarily for management. Huh?
Right.
Okay.
That's correct.
So,
and their basic purpose is to fulfill the mission of that organization. And every organization, and you know this, you've been in business for a lot of years, every organization should have a mission statement.
Okay. Mission statement. So you got to have a mission statement as when you're a small company, you've got to have a mission statement for the board.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, totally you've got to have a mission. If you don't have a mission, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you.
I always say that to my clients. Okay.
Right. So, exactly. So the mission is your overall direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you. Here's another question. You run your business. It takes all your time. Why would an entrepreneur, a business owner, want to be on a board?
Well, probably the best answer for that, Ken, is that you will gain a lot of experience by being on the board to see how another company or another organization operates. You will also meet people who may be in similar or have had similar experiences, so you're going to gain experience that way. And you're going to meet new people who may be able to help your business.
Okay. Those are good reasons to be on a board. So now you're on a board. What are some of the, the perks, the benefits of being on a corporate board or nonprofit board? But let's go with corporate first.
Well, corporate, yes, the perks that you may get is that you'll receive some kind of compensation. Most corporate boards are going to give you some sort of compensation. It may not be a lot of money, and in some of the smaller organizations, it may be just a dinner. And you exchange information or a round of golf or something like that. For a larger corporation, it could be serious money. I mean, some corporate boards pay $50,000 to $100,000 a year to board members, plus expenses to and from meetings. But they're expected to contribute, and they're expected to provide their expertise, their experience, their skills. On a nonprofit board, you're not going to get compensation. Because most nonprofit organizations have in their constitution and bylaws that they do not receive compensation, but can be reimbursed for their expenses.
Hmm. How many times do corporate board members meet? Do they meet every month, every quarter, once a year?
Depends on the size of the organization. I would say that if there was an average, maybe it's 3 to 4 times a year. And if they're then serving on some other committees or subcommittees, there may be more meetings for that area. I mean, suppose you're on an audit committee, you may be meeting much more frequently, maybe 6 times a year. It just depends upon the size. If it's a smaller company, they may decide only to meet twice a year and bring in the outside directors. Mm-hmm. And that's another benefit, let me just say that, is that to have an outside independent director, that person, he or she can bring a fresh idea to a small company that might make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, this is like coaches and consultants.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what are some of the topics or some of the duties and responsibilities of a board? What do they talk about? What do they do when they have a meeting?
Well, let me first say this, is that there are legal requirements, and that is that there's three principles. One is called the duty of care, one's the duty of loyalty, and one's the duty of obedience. Let me just treat this real quickly. The duty of care just basically requires the people that are on the board to use reasonable care and good judgment in making decisions and policies for the organization. And that's usually required by law that happens. Loyalty requires that you're faithful to the organization. In other words, we always say it's the hats. Right now, you wear a hat for your family, you wear a hat for your church, you wear a hat for your business, you may wear a hat if you're in a youth organization, but when you go to this corporation or this organization, you got to wear their hat. And when you wear their hat, you put all those other hats aside. That's a pretty easy way to explain that.
Okay.
And then the final one is the duty of obedience, and that just means that all of us are required by federal, state, local laws and bylaws and articles of incorporation and other policies. We're required to do certain things, and you got to follow those laws.
So,
can't break
so
the law when you're on a board.
Okay, so when you're sitting on boards, on a board, what are some of the topics that are discussed at these meetings?
You mean the board responsibilities?
Yeah, what is it that they're doing when they're meeting?
The key thing is that they're determining and analyzing and advancing the corporation's mission and purpose. How to move that forward. They're going to talk about the chief executive officer and assess that person and analyze that person and see if they're doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make sure they have adequate resources to carry out the functions of the corporation. So they're going to look at their financial statements,
mm-hmm,
and determine if they have the money to do the things that they want to do. They're going to give financial oversight, because that's one of the key things, especially if it's a publicly traded organization under,
mm-hmm,
Sarbanes-Oxley. That's what they're required to do. Under a non-for-profit, Sarbanes-Oxley doesn't apply, but many boards are using the Sarbanes-Oxley model to now run the non-profit, so they can do that. They're going to look at and examine and analyze and monitor programs and services.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to look at the organization's or the company's image and say, hey, is it good? Is it bad? That's why you see many companies that change their logos, because they're trying to keep up with modern times. The other thing is they're going to, in their leadership, they're going to look for new and talented directors to take over when the other one's terms expire. That's part of it. And then they're going to make sure that they have the ethical and legal integrity that's necessary to perform their duties. So that's kind of a short list.
Okay. What about do corporate boards, do they hire and fire the CEO and the management of the company? Are they responsibility? Is that their responsibility?
Their responsibility is generally the hiring and firing of the CEO, preparing a compensation package, and making sure that the company is well run. Depends. See, here it again. It depends on the size of the company. There may be a small company where the owner just has an advisory board who has no hiring and firing,
mm-hmm,
authority. I mean, they just come in and advise. So that CEO could fire the board.
Hmm. Okay.
So you have to go to the organizational documents and determine exactly what is the scope and responsibility of the board.
This is very
In most nonprofit organizations, the board does have that power to hire and fire the CEO.
Now, do board members? I talked about a little bit about benefits. Do they get stock? Are they concerned with? Do they get stock options on a board?
Some corporations allow for the payment and compensation to be in the form of stock options, or to give the person an opportunity to purchase stock. Mm-hmm. It varies again with each corporation. You'd have to read each corporation's articles of incorporation and know exactly what's involved. Some do not. Smaller companies are not going to probably give options. Some companies, a lot of the companies that started out in Silicon Valley back in the 90s, that was their form of compensation to a lot of the people. They gave stock options instead of pay because mm-hmm. they didn't have money. So that's how they grew the company. They got the people to work, and they did it in exchange for stock options. Some of the companies prospered, and people made a lot of money. Some companies didn't prosper, and the people didn't make any money.
So are board of directors responsible, or they're concerned with the stock price of that particular company? Is that one of their goals, or to make sure that the stock price goes up, or is that the CEO's responsibility?
That's a tough one, because I'm sure that most boards are concerned with the stock price, but they should also be concerned with the overall well-being of the corporation and forget about the stock price. The stock price can go up and down and may not have anything to do with how well the company's run. Mm-hmm. It may be look at the market.
It's like psychology coming in there.
Absolutely.
You think a company's good and they're in a good industry, hey, and everybody's pushing the stock and they're getting favorable press, then the stock price can go up. I mean, that they got good management or good product. It's just that psychology.
Sure, and a lot of times the stock will go up just because you do have good management and because a new CEO has been named who has experience, who's done well with other companies. So your stock price could go up, and some boards have done that. They've chosen a person with great experience.
Okay, so I guess I'm going to ask you, with the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation that was passed, and you got the laws on the books now, is it easier or tougher to be on a corporate board?
With Sarbanes-Oxley, I don't think it's any harder to be on a corporate board. I think the purpose of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act was to make things more transparent. And by transparent, we mean that you can look through and see what's actually happening within the organization, and that there's no walls blocking you from seeing those transactions. That's why Sarbanes-Oxley, you have to develop an audit committee that reviews the situation, and that the CEO signs off with the clear understanding that he or she understands the financial picture of the corporation. No longer can you say, well, I didn't know. You have to sign personally that you have looked at the financial data and that you do clearly understand it. And that's the big difference, and that's what some companies did in the past, where the CEO said, gee, I didn't know. I had turned it all over to my accounting department. Well, that's a lame excuse in anybody's book, but they got away with it because the law wasn't there. Now, Sarbanes-Oxley only applies to publicly traded corporations. It does not apply to nonprofits. It does not apply to a lot of small businesses. One of the big problems with Sarbanes-Oxley is that it's expensive to implement.
Yeah.
Companies, large companies, say it costs between $4 and $10 million a year implement it.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of money, but big corporations can afford it. Small corporations can't afford it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to drive some smaller corporations who were publicly traded to go private, so they don't have to even comply with it. Why? You know, they don't want government in their back pocket.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let me ask you, we've talked about some of the benefits of being a corporate board member. What are some of the disadvantages to being on
You can be sued.
Yeah, let's talk about that, really. Didn't count on that. You say, I'm just here for the perks. Am I liable to?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Ken, because some people just get on a board because of the supposed perks. You know, they want to go to these meetings at Pebble Beach or wherever else the company may be having them. But there are, as I mentioned before, there's legal implications. And as I mentioned, you are responsible for using good care and reasonable judgment. And if it's not reasonable, you can be sued, because if the board makes a wrong decision, if the company goes south, the board can be sued by the shareholders.
Oh, really?
Because they've been harmed.
So how do we guard against how are board members protected from that liability? Do they get their own insurance? How does that work?
Well, they can get their own insurance, but most organizations have what we call directors and officers insurance,
mm-hmm.
which protects the director. And a lot of them have indemnification clauses, which means if the director is sued, the organization will pay for their legal expenses as long as it's for, you know, for just cause. If the board member has done something illegal, the policy is not going to cover that illegality.
Right.
So we have to
look at that.
And some of that could be where you have a conflict of interest. I give the example, say, for example, you're sitting on the board and your brother-in-law's a paint contractor, and you want your house or your church or the school building or the company building or whatever it is painted, and he wins the bid, and you're sitting on the board, you don't say anything about it. Well, that's a conflict of interest because somebody that you know very closely is going to benefit. And that's just you can't have that. What you have to do is you have to then say as a board member, hey, guys, if we're going to pick my brother, John, as the paint contractor, just want to let you know he is my brother or my brother-in-law. And I want to declare that. And it's okay if he still gets the business, but I want that up front on the table so you know it. Conflicts of interest gets more people into trouble than anything else because – they don't want to mention it, or they actually want the other person to have gain. You've seen it in a lot of political arenas. We've just seen it recently with a senator from Alaska who's been indicted. Whether it's true or not, we don't know yet, but apparently he had some construction work done to his home.
So, how did that happen? So he was on a board and. Why is he in trouble?
He's a member of Congress, and he may have had his position influenced.
Okay, I got a particular issue,
and maybe that's a stretch, but the same thing happens with a board. I was using the paint contractor, but you could use the printing company or. A hotel where the people may always want to meet. There's many ways to have conflicts of interest, and the board has to recognize those. And in fact, we encourage people to sign conflict of interest statements that if a conflict arises, that they will bring it to the attention of the board so that they can't say later on, well, I didn't know anything about this.
So if you're coming on a board, what are some of the things you should know before accepting a position on the board? So they have articles of incorporation or duties and responsibilities of a corporate board member, so you can review that stuff and make sure that you're covered in terms of liabilities. What are some of the things that we need to know about if you're going to be on a board that we need to read and review?
Number one, the thing that probably is the greatest problem is the commitment that people make when they're serving on the board. They don't understand that it involves time, money, and energy. And we recommend that there be a commitment form that the person signs that says, if I join this board, it's going to require, let's say, 4 meetings a year, plus maybe some teleconferences, plus some side study, plus board orientation or whatever else might be. And then they sign off of this, put their name down, they sign off of it and date it. So they understand what that commitment is, because there's nothing worse than get somebody on the board who says, gee, I didn't realize it was going to require all this time and effort, because you've gone through the selection process, found this person, and now they say they don't have the time. Wouldn't you like to know that beforehand?
Yeah, definitely.
And then as far as the other items are concerned, the perfect board kind of outlines a lot of the things that you should know going in, and certainly if I'm on a board, I'd want to know these things, especially with the litigious society we have out there now where people are quick to sue. I don't want to have that liability without knowing I'm protected. So I would want to make sure that the association or the organization or the corporation has directors and officers liability insurance, that they have an indemnification, that they're current with all their filings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, this is really good stuff. Okay.
Hmm. Yeah, it's just not, Ken, it's not just something you put on your resume.
Okay. There's some other things involved. So what does a board look for in individuals? You're thinking about joining them. Or if a board wants to recruit new members for their board, what are they looking for?
My advice is to use what we call a talent matrix. Mm-hmm. And that is that every board probably needs somebody with some accounting or financial experience and background. In fact, it's probably a good idea to have one or two of those people on the board.
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably want somebody with marketing skills. You'd probably want somebody with some legal skills. You may want somebody with press relations skills. And go down the list and determine what kind of people that you want on your board. Put that down on the left-hand side of the legal pad. And on the right-hand side, start identifying people that you could fill into those spots. Because then you have a real good representative sample of people with experience and skills and talents that can help you move the corporation forward. Just to put on your friends and your neighbors and your family members, that's not too smart unless they all have those kinds of skills, because you'll be dealing with people more in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is that you want as many people with diverse skills and talents and backgrounds to come onto a board, so you have a greater depth and breadth of experience that comes to that board, and only good things can happen then.
So how big is your perfect board? How big should it be?
The IRS said that in 2007, from 1987 to 2007, we grew to 1.8 million nonprofit organizations. Now, that's just nonprofit. I'm not even talking about corporations. You know,
mm-hmm.
how many millions of those are out there? And the average board size is 19.
Wow. Okay.
So there's 40 to 50 million people in nonprofit governance. I don't even want to guess how many are in corporate governance, but I'm going to assume maybe 40 or 50 million more. There's going to be some crossover, obviously. But an average-sized board, ASAE says it's 19. It depends on the board. It might be 11. It might be 7. It might be 12, if you want an even number. Their local chapter of the Boy Scouts here in the Maryland area has a board that's 72.
Okay. Oh, man.
I think that's too big.
Yeah. Can you ever get anything done when you have boards that are that big, you know, 72 members, 50 members, even 19 members? Is that too large? I mean,
well, they have their meetings, and I think the Boy Scouts actually have what they call an executive committee, so that's only about 19 or 17 people. They'll be the ones that get the work done through the year. It depends on the organization, Ken, as far as the organizational size. You can get things done, sure, because you're going to go through with an agenda in your meeting. You're going to, you know, dole out the work, make sure it gets done. Reports will come back in. You're going to study these things before the board meeting. That's what you hope your board members do, so that they come in prepared to discuss and take action.
Wow. And you talked about diversity. Let's talk about, and we've got a few minutes, and hopefully I'm not, we'll just continue to have a conversation, but I'll try to
sure.
end this quickly. But I have some great discussions going on here. Diversity, what are women and minorities being unrepresented on boards? And what
I think the women and minorities have, I'm sorry, I think women and minorities have made fantastic strides in the last decade. In fact, in the nonprofit arena, the average executive director, the profile of the average executive director is a woman who's 59 years old. So there's been tremendous strides made in that area, and I think for minorities as well. Because corporations and organizations are reaching out, they want to have their constituencies represented, because it means, in the case of a corporation, it means more sales.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of a nonprofit, it means more members.
Okay, more members, more
sales. I would certainly advise the board to reach out to as many people as they feel they should for the purpose and the mission of that organization.
I'll say, okay, so what industries are doing a good job and what industries are doing a bad job when it comes to women and minorities on boards? That might be a tough one for you.
Yeah, I don't have any empirical data on that at all, Ken, so I don't feel I could really answer that question. That's an interesting thing. I'm sure there's probably something out there, but I just haven't studied that particular area. And I've heard – I'm sorry?
We have to get you to come back with that information.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah, we've all heard the glass ceiling, mm-hmm. and that a lot of women feel that they're underrepresented, but – gee, I get some reports, some annual reports in from corporations, and I see women on those, and we've had women head up major corporations. I mean, the lady who ran Hewlett Packard, her name escapes me. Her first name was Carly, I believe. You know, it takes time to change society, and I think the time is, you know, it is changing. We're seeing more minorities, whether you know it be black or Latino or whatever. I just think those changes are coming. I see them, but I haven't studied them.
Okay, well, let's talk about Enron. What happened there? But anyway, with the scandals like Enron, do you see a downturn and board corruption and more emphasis on board ethics now?
Well, Enron was an aberration. I really believe that most corporations are run legitimately. The people are honest. They try to do the best job. Enron was an aberration. Clearly, it was people who covered up documents. They destroyed documents. Everybody thought the ship was going fine. They sold the package to their employees even. I mean, you had people who had invested their entire pension into their own company stock.
Yeah.
And I was taught a long time ago by a fellow who recently passed away, and you know this too, Ken, you never put all your eggs in one basket. You just don't do that.
Oh, no.
But those people were just riding the upward curve, and when that curve hit the peak, which we know a curve always hits its peak and comes back down, they were happy, and that company was just sailing. But then it hit the top and started coming back down. I can't tell you all the inner things that went on, but I do know that, what, two or three of the fellows went to jail?
Mm-hmm.
So they paid?
So I was just commenting when I was a certified financial planner back in the 80s and 90s, and I had a few of my clients had money and I guess, MCI stock, and they say the stock's going well, it's doing this, that, and the other. I said that's all well and good, but you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You spread it out, and I think a few years later, you know, MCI was acquired, and then WorldCom, and you know, I don't think that company's no longer in. But I guess we're not talking about financial plan right now. But you definitely have to diversify your assets. Different things. But anyway, we're running out of time, but what are some of the top traits of a good, or I'd say using your book, the perfect board member, what are the top traits of a perfect board member?
The key trait that I use all the time and stress, and we all know it, is pretty easy. It's just plain ordinary honesty. We just need to have people with impeccable trust and integrity. And Ken, I can tell you that when people look to you and they know they can trust you, then they respect you. Your opinion means a heck of a lot more because they know it comes from the heart and the mind, and that they can trust whatever you say. You've seen countless individuals through your career that are like that, that you just know when John or Bill or Susie speaks that you can trust them. That mm-hmm. means so, so much to a board.
And they're going to do the right thing.
Absolutely. And the second was just that the person is responsible. they actually accept what is that they're told to do, and then they perform it. They get it done. We don't want somebody on a board who just says, "Well, I'm here, put my name on the door, and I'm here." We don't want that person. We want somebody that works. And also, I used the term earlier, commitment, that the person is committed, that they're going to give their time and their energy to perform the job, because it is a job. It really is a job. I mean, there's responsibilities, we've already said. The fourth one is that they're independent, that they think for themselves. They just don't go along with the crowd. I don't want a yes person to be on the board. I want somebody to challenge the board. Not disruptive. There's a big difference. But somebody who says, "Hey, have we thought about this? Or have we looked at it from this perspective?" Because sometimes boards get locked into to themselves too often, and an outside voice can really help them. And you probably advise that in your business too. And then the final thing as the top five is that the person is decisive. They're willing to make a decision, because boards have to make decisions. You can't sit on something for months and months and months. You got to make a decision. It may be the wrong decision, but it's a decision. None of us, I don't think there's a person in this world who can say that they've made the right decision every time.
I'm just thinking about this, and we're talking about primarily maybe corporate boards or large boards, but how does a corporate board help entrepreneurs and small business owners grow their business?
I mean, how a small business with a board can be helped?
Right.
Again, it brings in outside oversight. If you're a small businessman and you're listening to this show, and you want to have a real accelerator for your business, bring in some people from your community that have different skill sets, different experience levels, and different spheres of influence, we call them. Put them on your board in an advisory role. Let them look at your financials. Let them look at your marketing plan, your strategic plan. You'll be surprised what they'll say. And maybe they show you a new avenue of growth. Maybe they say you're doing a great job and you don't need any outside work or outside, you know, influence. But maybe they say, "Hey, go down this road." That's the value. I think it's extremely valuable, especially for a young company.
Right. And you've written a nice book called The Perfect Board. I'd like to talk a little bit about that before we end our conversation. This has been a fascinating conversation, by the way. I really enjoy learning more about the ins and outs of a corporate board. But so the corporate board, tell us about the book, The Perfect Board. What inspired you to write this book?
After 31 years of dealing with boards of directors.
Been there,
I
done
found,
that, got a t-shirt.
Yeah, but I found, Ken, as you have found in your sales and marketing consulting, that a lot of people just don't know. They think they know, but they won't admit that they don't know. And I found that as I went through my career and I explained to them what their responsibilities were through orientations and all, that they were very appreciative of being told, because they just didn't know. We don't teach it in college. We don't teach it in high school. I don't know of any courses that are taught. Now, some of the universities are developing nonprofit management centers where they're starting to teach this, but heretofore it wasn't taught. So they had to learn on their own, and that's why I wrote the book. And I wanted to write the book in a very simple, kind of a primer style that's easy to read, didn't take long to read. It takes about an hour and 15 minutes to read. So, and it walks the person through, gives them some board speak information, and allows them to know what's expected of them on a board.
Wow. And so you learn how to be an effective board member, how to encourage that unity, no scandals, no tension, no conflict, I guess, how to deal with public scrutiny. That was some good stuff in there. And the bylaws,
sure,
and the minutes, the rules of order, all that stuff. Okay.
It's all in there. It walks the person through. So for a person who's just coming onto a board, It's like that, the basic information, the basic manual, how to do. And then for the person who's already been on a board, it's a good reminder. And they may not know everything anyhow. They may have been on a board for 10 years, but they may not know much about indemnification or Sarbanes-Oxley.
Wow. Okay. So as we conclude here, what people should get from your book, The Perfect Board, and from our conversation, what is it that you want to summarize or get people to understand about being on a corporate board?
The biggest message I'd like to get out about being on a corporate board is to really do it right. If you do it right, Mark Twain even said it. He said, if you always do right, it'll gratify most of the people and it'll astonish the rest. And so it's hard to change those words because, he's a pretty famous guy. But that's the key. If you do it right, then you don't have to work back. You don't have to make excuses. You don't have to worry about legal implications, because if you do it right, that means you're telling the truth. You're working to the best of the organization. And that's probably the key message out of the whole thing, Ken.
All right. And so you've written a book, The Perfect Board. How do we get that book? What's the best way? And go ahead.
You can go to my website, theperfectboard.com, or if you want to, and you can buy it there, and any books there I'll autograph, but you can also buy it at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and they offer great discounts, so I can't compete with their discounts.
Okay, you can't compete, and you wrote the book. Okay, so The Perfect Board, so if somebody wants to get that book, they can go to your website, which is, you said, theperfectboard.com?
Theperfectboard.com. And we've also got some other free information on there, commitment form, conflict of interest form, and some other articles that they can download.
Oh, that's really good. And I also put the book, The Perfect Board, I guess the second edition, put that on, you can find that on the Blog Talk Radio website so people can look at that. And also, again, your corporate website is, again, what?
ClemensMGMT.com.
Okay. All right, then. So thank you so very much. Really enjoyed this conversation. We got to get you back, and we'll explore this a little bit more. If we have any questions I didn't answer, maybe I'll answer then. So thank you so very much.
Ken, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Cal Clemens, The Perfect Board. Go get that book. Definitely, go get that book. I really enjoyed this. Listen, you always learn something when you bring in good guests, I'm telling you. So anyway, so that is the show. My question to you, as I always ask you, what have you learned today? How will you apply what you've learned? Specifically, what action steps will you implement to improve your business and increase your profitability? Get Cal's book, The Perfect Board. Go to his website. So if you're looking for new ideas and strategies to build your business, come to the right place. Go ahead and check out our newsletters. We have two newsletters. You can subscribe to Better Sales and Profits Now. Go to Better Sales and Profits Now and sign up. You'll get new ideas and strategies to build your business, and it gives you helpful tips and hits. We've got about 380 and counting. But you can subscribe to the newsletter right there on Better Sales and Profits Now. If you want to connect with other entrepreneurs, you can join NBC Connect. And last year we connected with 500 businesses, and this year we're up to about 400 businesses now. And we meet online. Cal's going to be on next Tuesday. We meet online every Tuesday, Eastern Standard Time, from 8 to 9. So if you want to connect with other entrepreneurs, check out my-business-community.com. That's my-business-community.com. We have go to the event section, and there's a weekly announcement, and you can sign up right there. And it's invitation only, and it's pretty exclusive. We don't let everybody in. So, and also, if you listen to the program, please give us a comment and tell us how we're doing. If you want to be a guest on the show, you've got an interesting idea that you want to share, contact us. Go to bettersalesandprofitsnow.com. That's Better Sales and Profits Now, or go to My Business Community. That's my-business-community.com. So, as we end the show, dare to be great, be remarkable, be extraordinary, stay profitable, and go make that sale. Brian Huntley of New Wine Music, take us out.